One of the interesting things, if you look at December 2024 and December 2025, they looked identical in the market. But as we came into 2025, the tariffs hit and that kind of cratered the market. But what happened in 26 now would have happened in 25 without those tariffs. Because if you look at the general cycles, they happen this way. As prices go up, more capacity comes in, gets overcapacitated, and you know the cycle moves.
Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and Supply Chain Hall of Famer Jake Barr here with you on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's live stream. Hey, Jake, how are we doing today?
I am hot and heavy, just like freight rates are.
And just like the rest of the world is right now. Man, this heat wave has been something. But folks, we got a great show teed up, folks. We're going to dive into the third installment of the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index Rates Edition. And as Jake just mentioned, hey, we all know the Freight Payment Index has been around for years. But at the beginning of 2026, U.S. Bank partnered with DAT Freight Analytics to produce a supplementary report called the Rates Edition. It provides a unique market perspective into a variety of data and helpful info, dry van spot rates, contract rates, fuel average, cost per mile rates, along with important economic context and perspective. Now, why is this important? Well, Jake, this resource is a joint project, again, delivered to the market by these two data powerhouses, U.S. Bank, which processes more than $46 billion in freight payments annually, and DAT Freight Analytics, who has an incredible database of more than $1 trillion in freight market transactions. So, Jake, what does this mean? The Rates Edition, along with the conversations, can help supply chain professionals better understand what's going on in the freight market and, better yet, what they can do to better navigate the months to come. Jake, should be a great conversation. Is that right?
Absolutely. We're talking about the Godfathers of Freight here.
The Godfathers of Freight. I like that moniker. Well, folks, you're going to love hearing from not just Jake, but the Godfathers of Freight and Chris and Bobby. All right. So, Jake, with no further ado, let's bring in the Godfathers of Freight, Bobby Holland, Director of Freight Business Analytics at U.S. Bank, and Dr. Chris Kaplis, Chief Scientist with DAT Freight and Analytics. Hey, hey, Bobby, great to have you back. How you doing?
I am doing well. Glad to be here.
Do you like your new title that Jake bestowed upon you and Chris?
Godfathers of Freight.
It's a scary one to live up to, but I'll do my best.
And Chris Kaplis, Dr. Chris Kaplis, great to have you here. How you doing?
Doing all right. Glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have y'all both back here. We got a lot of stuff to get to, but we'll start with a little fun warm-up question, Chris, Bobby, and Jake. So, and we're going to base this on some business history because I'm a bit of a history nerd. So on today's date, July 14th, way back in 1906, Tom Carvel was born in Athens, Greece. He later immigrated to the United States, borrow $15 from his future wife, Agnes, and he'd use that to start the famous Carvel Ice Cream Company. The rest is history. Carvel has some 373 locations today. And of course, I'm truncating that incredible story. But, you know, one of my go-tos of beating heat is ice cream. Chris, I want to ask you, what is your best practice for beating the heat?
Leave town. I mean, get to where it's cooler. But I like ice cream too. I mean, black raspberry ice cream is the best, or salted caramel.
Okay. All right, folks, we want to hear your flavors. If you're an ice cream fan out there, Bobby, same question. Is it ice cream? How do you beat the heat?
Ice. Lots of ice, but ice cream will work too. I'm a vanilla guy. I put stuff on it, but I'm a vanilla guy.
And Bobby, you share pre-show with us that you put, pecans or
Spanish peanuts
on vanilla ice cream. That's new for me. Sure. I have to give it a try.
It's kind of like half of a sundae.
Okay. All right. So, Jake, we got ice cream recommendations from Chris and Bobby. Your take for beating the heat.
Well, I'll jump in. I'll say ice cream as well and strawberry. But given the fact that Chris made the foray into black raspberry chip, you know, I'm going to say everybody knows the best ice cream is Grater's. Why? Because Oprah ended up resulting in two new factories being built after she put it at the top of her list.
Okay.
No, the thing is, every town up here in New England has the best ice cream. There's so many local shops. It's like breweries up here. So every town has the best. So there's good ice cream everywhere.
All right. We're going to have a ice cream investigative podcast series. We'll see. All right. So we're on a level set here. We got a lot to get to here today. And Chris, again, great to have you back. You set the markets ablaze with your last appearance here at Supply Chain Now. Let's level set for the three people out there that may not know, you know, what you do and what DAT Freight Analytics does. Would you shed light on both, please?
Yeah, sure. My name is Chris Kaplis, Chief Scientist at DAT Freight Analytics. I was part of an acquisition from a company called Chainalytics back in 2020, brought over the shipper side of benchmarking. And essentially, DAT is the market-leading freight analytics platform, serving shippers, carriers, brokers. We lead the market as far as broker solutions. We help brokers match, identify loads, benchmark their rates, pretty much all in one. On the shipper side, we've been doing this for a number of years at Chainalytics prior, but we help shippers, carriers, and brokers make better decisions, make the market more efficient.
I like it. Making those better decisions, critical here today. Chris, thanks for being back with us. And by the way, Trisha agrees with you. Graders. Actually, it wasn't Chris. It was Jake that highly recommended Graders. Okay. All right. All right. So, Bobby, you're no stranger to our Supply Chain Now Global fam. We've been collaborating for years to help inform supply chain leaders of what's going on in the domestic freight markets and more. But for folks new, first time maybe here today, tell us about the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index, please.
Well, the Freight Payment Index Rates Edition is a new publication. It is a two-page, easy-to-read publication. We're trying to do with it is to make freight rate movement easier to understand and more useful in real customer decisions. So we have this two-page document. It shows rolling six-month and year-over-year views of contract, spot, and fuel rates. And then the commentary kind of connects those rates and the rate movements to broader market conditions. And we wanted it to be a connection point between our quarterly regular freight payment index document.
And Jake, to back up on what Bobby shared there, you know, you're no stranger, been working in the industry for over 30 years, Supply Chain Hall of Famer. Tell us about the value of resources like this.
Hey, you can never have enough data, especially productive data, data that's actually been vetted thoroughly and can help you with providing you the ability to think about the implications of which way the market's heading. Because ultimately, you've got to be able to serve the market, whether you're a shipper, how you provide services, a transportation agent, and you've got to be able to do that in an efficient way, right? Because you're not running charities. You're running live operating businesses. And so you've got to be able to understand, do I need to invest in more equipment? Yes or no? If so, where, right? How do I think about that? If you're on the shipper side, you've got to say, hey, how do I make sure that I'm not eroding my margins and causing me to actually have to lift prices in an inflationary period, right, when I don't need to?
All right. So we could dive right into the report, but I got a couple more things I want to unpack because these are great resources for folks. And Chris, I tell you, I think we both enjoy, the world enjoys Dr. Jason Miller's perspective on the market. You had him on your great podcast here recently, Freight Vine. Folks, go find that. And I want to pose this to you because one of the questions I think you and him both spoke to was this one. It's kind of a two-parter. Is the truckload market finally turning, or are we just watching a feeding frenzy fueled by AI hype? Share a couple observations there, Chris.
Yeah, it's a kind of a mix of the two. So the thing about the market turning, the only surprise is that people are surprised. I mean, the market, this is what it does. We're a supply and demand industry. We have such a long tail of small providers that come in and out of the market. So we're going to constantly cycle. And one of the interesting things, if you look at December 2024 and December 2025, they looked identical in the market. But as we came into 2025, the tariffs hit and that kind of cratered the market. But what happened in 26 now would have happened in 25 without those tariffs. Because if you look at the general cycles, they happen this way. As prices go up, more capacity comes in, gets overcapacitated, and you know the cycle moves. What makes this one different, this cycle, it's more capacity-driven. Usually it's demand-driven. You think of the pandemic and in Q3 of 2020 when everyone was buying a bunch of stuff, that really drove demand. Here it's more capacity. We've seen a lot of capacity driven out of the market, mainly drivers, and we can talk about that, the different things that have done. And so this is really a capacity-driven cycle, but it's having all the same effects. Whenever supply and demand is out of sync, it's either going to be a tightening market or a loosening market. We're tightening, have been since December 2025. The reason why capacity is tighter, because drivers have been driven out, but the demand is relatively stable, except in data center build out. And we think data center build out, and there's a really great article by the Wall Street Journal recently that talked about the impact on freight, on air freight, and that's really big. Liz Walker's walked around that. But then also you look at flatbed, you consider that makes sense. But a lot of dry van carriers, there's a lot of stuff that goes into these centers, and that's really propping up the demand side. But the real thing is driving this cycle and tightening the rates is capacity.
You know, I saw that same article. In fact, we reported it on over the weekend, the one in the Wall Street Journal, and how the data center boom, AI investment boom, is really doing crazy things with the air freight market in particular. Jake, he called you out. You agree or disagree with Dr. Chris Kaplis?
Chris has more titles than I have, time to talk through. All right. But I actually fully agree with him on this. Absolutely. And I'll point to a data point that I actually think Chris probably has detailed stats on. The percentage of rejects, in today's market is incredibly high. So that is also another telltale factor of capacity. The carriers are in control. We've swung to the point where the carriers are in control, and they are saying, oh, no. I'm not going and flooding the market with additional equipment. I'm actually going to take advantage here, and I'm going to be choiceful about what loads I take and at what price.
I got a two-part question to ask the whole panel. And Bobby, I want to lead with you here if that works. I'm gonna bring up the rates edition here and some of the key metrics that folks will find at the very top of each of these editions. And so the two-part question here: what's changed the most in the freight market since the very first rates edition, which again was only 6 months and some change ago? It feels like 60 years ago, though. And what's one thing that stands out the most in this latest release? So, Bobby, I know you're chomping at the bit. Your thoughts on those questions.
So what's changed in the marketplace since then? I agree with the comments before that this has become a pricing power move or market for carriers. Again, the rates have gone up, as Jake put it and as Chris put it. But we haven't had – the prices have gone up. The capacity has gone down. And again, it just points to whatever. I can't really add a lot more. The carriers are in control right now until that changes. For all the reasons that we've discussed, exits, there's a lot of legal impacts that have affected drivers and causing shortages. So there's a lot of pressure in that regard. And that's changed, not to mention gas prices. So you kind of see all of these things working in tandem to drive the prices up. But it's not demand-led, definitely not, as we've all agreed.
Yep. And we'll touch on those diesel prices here momentarily. Chris, same two questions. What's changed the most since January and one thing that sticks out?
I think it's the big thing is the trends continued. So in, like I said, December 2025, we saw everything going up. We're saying, okay, is something going to happen? Because a lot of transportation executives at shippers have been caught crying wolf for the last 3 years. This year it's going to tighten up. This year it's going to tighten up. And this year it finally did. And so we saw it hold through Q1, Q2, and it continued on. We didn't know if it would crater back down again if volumes had decreased. So I think we've seen it continue and kind of ramp up and pick up its speed a little bit. But any of us who've been in this market long enough, you know where it's heading. You look at what spot rates do, dynamic rates do, and that's usually about a 6 month to 9 month lead where contract rates do. You look over year over year. So there are a lot of signals. What Jake said earlier, there's so much data out there. And the two big things, it's not just more data, it's better data. We're better than we were in the 90s. Oh my God, that was horrible. But then it's also better distributed. It's not just like some analysts have this data. Every shipper, every carrier, every broker has access to this carriers, owner operators have the market on their smartphone. So we have so much more access to this data. I think we're able to respond to it much faster. And so we're reacting to that. And so I'm seeing that happening more and more. But one quick thing about something Jake said, the rejects, I agree with that. But that is kind of an older framework for the way that ship transportation is being procured, especially truckload. It used to be everything gets in the bid, goes in the routing guide, and then you have rejects and failures there. We're seeing a larger and larger percentage of loads goes direct to spot. Spot is strategic. So we're seeing about 20% of the volume going that way. So just looking at rejects misses a big section of the market. So what we do at DAT, we look at the dynamic rate. If a rate hasn't appeared for a certain amount of time, it's dynamic. Whether you call it spot, call it a failure, whatever, it's not a contracted rate. And you're exactly right. That is going through the roof now. But a lot of it is not just rejects. It's just the shippers are better at handling this freight that's random and not regularly scheduled.
Okay. All right. And Jake, before I get your comments, I just want to point out, Chris bemoaned how bad things were in the 90s. But hey, the music was pretty good, Chris. The music was pretty good in the 1990s. All right. So Jake, weigh in on those two questions. What's changed the most since the first of the year? And one thing that stands out.
I never had a CEO or CFO ask me about my musical taste doing that. They asked me what was I spending and what was I spending it on and where were the pain points, right? So I want to echo what Chris said because he's right on. The spot piece, if you look at that at the moment, is also through the roof. And I believe that is also a testament to the analytics and the AI capability. Folks are using the available information and trying to leverage it quickly in acquiring support, freight rate support against needs, right? So I describe it as, you know, we might've been in a squirrel cage running around for a loose peanut in the squirrels in the cage in the 90s. We're on hyperdrive, okay?
Yeah, if you look at dry van, I'm just looking at some numbers right now for DAT, just popping it up. We're at about 24% dynamic or spot. That's not all just rejects. That's the non-reoccurring rates. Look at it that way. That's about 10%, 10 points higher than typically it was about a year and a half ago. So yeah, it's higher. And flatbed's even crazier. Flatbed is, gosh, I'm seeing it peaking at almost 50%.
I think flatbed is going to go double that, Chris, in the coming. And the reason I say that is there's such a limit right now on the capacity. Look, flatbeds were and have always been a valuable piece of a network design. But the reality is no one and no party ever created the amount of capacity in flatbed to be able to move components to build these data centers at the rate at which we're trying to put them up.
Yeah, I think that's what makes it a standout is the fact that it moves so quickly, the speed of the move in spot rates relative to what the volume was doing. And, you know, you guys have helped identify some of the reasons why that moved so fast. And I also agree, too, that, you know, because of the data, customers are paying more attention to all of these factors and fine tuning their strategies to deal with the current state of the market and how fast it's moving.
Yeah, but the one thing that's constant, though, CFOs are still stymied why contracts are breaking. I thought a contract was a contract. Why are they asking for their rates to come up? It's like it's the same as it ever was.
Same as ever was. We got a lot more to get into this edition. But I want to work in this perspective from Alex Terry, who serves as Director of Transportation with Veritiv, a leading provider of packaging, print, and facility solutions. Alex was quoted in the rates edition saying, quote, freight volumes may appear stable, but costs are telling a different story. As contract rates catch up to spot pricing, shippers face growing exposure to higher transportation spend, end quote.
Let's quote a Rocky movie with Clubber Lane. If you're a shipper, I predict pain, okay? Pain over the coming months, okay?
That's one of my favorite moments in the whole series, Jake. Chris, I want to ask you, though, so the rates edition, this edition installment of the rates edition covers market activity through about the end of May, right, 2026. So in particular, Chris, in the last few weeks, your observations of what we've seen.
Yeah, more of the same. The trends continue. So the quite real question at the end of May was, would it continue or is it a blip? The produce season, is that going to take it off or is that going to fade away? And the answer is it's continuing. And so we've seen rates continue to rise. Exactly the point, the spot rates really jumped up, but contract rates are starting to follow now. Something we always look at here at DAT is the new rate differential, looking at rates coming in for contract versus the rates that are leaving, and look at that. And right now, that's right around 13% for dry van, which means that you can expect on average, right, your new rates, if you're on a bid, about 10 to 12% higher. That's huge. It hasn't been that high since 2021. So it's a big jump right now. But we have to remember, it was flat for about 3 years, let's say. So what we were talking about before the show, you know, how I stand depends on where I sit, right? So this is the best of times for brokers and carriers, just like for shippers, the last 3 years were awesome. So it's, you know, it depends. It's the same coin, different sides.
Same coin, different sides. Jake, I know you want to get a comment in here. Maybe you too, Bobby, really quick on what we've seen in the last few weeks. Jake?
Go, Bobby. It's suicidal to make a comment at this point.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's basically the conclusion we all come to, which is that, you know, shippers need to stress test their budgets. They need to basically review their operations. They need to look at their contracts and spot rates carefully and basically make sure that whatever strategy they have fits this market, instead of trying to hope that, you know, what they're doing is going to get them through this. They have to adjust it. An indication sounds like they are.
All right. So I want to, speaking of recent market activity, the U.S. Energy Information Administration just this morning published the latest regional and national data on several things, but including U.S. on-highway diesel prices. Now, check this out. It's no, probably surprises no one out there. If you look at the price changes from 2 years ago, 1 year ago, 1 week ago, every single price is up except one. Somehow, the New England market has managed to lower on-highway diesel prices this week from last week. I'm assuming, Chris, you've got some magic sauce you're putting on up there on the New England market, Chris, huh?
No, it's still, you know, 40 cents a gallon higher than average. I mean, it's just just dropped a little bit, 3 cents. I mean, negative 0.031. I wouldn't write home about that. We're still way above average market.
That's right.
We're not California, thank God, but we're getting there.
All right. So, folks, we're going to double down on some of the themes you've already heard from Chris and Bobby and Jake. We're going to put a final point on some of these things, as well as get into a few other key takeaways from the rates edition. But at a broad level, right, as we get into the true signals and really focus on a data-based reality, that's important, right? No unicorns and dragons, all this stuff, reality. So at a broad level, one of y'all touched on this, but Chris, I'm going to circle back to you. The report suggests pricing is moving ahead of demand. What does that actually mean, and why is this cycle unfolding differently?
Well, I don't think it's unfolding differently. I mean, it's moving in the same direction. It's a cycle. And the question is, cycles can start one of two ways. Either demand goes up and it exceeds available capacity, or capacity is removed and that isn't enough for existing demand. And we're seeing that second one. Previous three cycles we've seen before this were really demand driven for the most part, but they also had some capacity issues. When the ELD mandate came down, that removed some capacity, some hour service rules, that removed some. But this was the big one. And the reason why it took 3 years to really happen, so much capacity came into the market during the pandemic. And a lot of it was dumb capacity, but a lot of it stayed. And so it took a long time for that to come out. And I think the real thing was what Bobby was talking about earlier, that some of the driver regulations, English language proficiency, a lot of the CDL mills finally being closed, thank God, because it was just flooding the market with unsafe drivers. I think that this is all good for the industry. We'll see what some other things are having, the effect it's going to have, like the recent Supreme Court hearing, the Montgomery case, what effect that'll have to filter through. But I think at the end of the day, whether demand goes up or capacity goes down, those two are the levers. You're going to see the cycle. And this is what we're seeing now. Spot above contract rates. But once spot gets a certain level above contract rates, more capacity is going to come in and it'll start going down. It's a constantly yo-yoing market.
Okay. Bobby, speaking of the yo-yo market, your thoughts?
My thoughts, I agree with Chris. The market is made up of a lot of complex variables and people making decisions on how to deal with those variables. And as we've talked about, you know, with the new regulations that have come out, say within the last year, That adds more variables that weren't necessarily in the market or changed the dynamic of the market. But basically, we've got, you know, millions of people making decisions on how to best cope with this on both sides of the fence. And so to Chris's point, to Dr. Chris's point, it's a cycle, but some of the differences in the things that people are making decisions about and having to deal with can affect the smoothness of that cycle. And that's what I believe we're seeing now.
That's a great point, Bobby, because I think it's not like there's a central poobah of truckload out there controlling capacity and demand and turning levers. But this is different from like LTL. There's fewer of them. And so it's a very different markets for that. But for I love the idea that you said, Bobby, is that it's a bunch of individuals responding to market pressures, whether it's incentives to get in or incentives to get out. That's what really drives this cycle. And as the market gets tighter, it's going to bring capacity in. Mm.
All right, Jake, I know you want to comment here.
Yeah, Chris, and I'm glad you brought that up because I actually have seen in a few of my clients where they've been trying to use LTL carriers as a pressure relief valve trigger for offsets. They're going, wait, I can't afford that, but I've got freight, I've got to move. So I'm looking at alternates. And all I'm seeing from that is it's, as you said, there's fewer players now. And as such, it's actually driving the rates up there as well.
Yeah, they're a little more insulated because, I mean, with Yellow leaving, a lot of extra capacity kind of got spread out there. But, yeah, they move. They're slightly different markets. Yeah.
So, Chris, I want to pick up there. It's a great segue because I think it's important for our audience, or at least segments of it, to really understand the different pricing mechanisms behind LTL and truckload. Would you shed some light on that, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, Jake has bought more truckload and LTL than I have ever seen, so I'll let him correct me when I'm wrong. But the way I like to think about it is there's two types of transportation modes. There's taxis and buses. Truckload is taxis. You got to go pick up, drop a load off, find another load. So economy is a scope. You want to reduce your empty miles. LTL is a bus, right? You do the same moves, and so it's all economy is a scale. That's why there's 200,000-plus truckload carriers. Because there's a kind of just scope, not really scale there. And for LTL, there's maybe 100 that matter, 150 that matter. And so you're seeing the pricing very different for that. And so you don't see as many cycles as dramatic as you do in truckload for LTL. Because it's usually negotiated annually. You might have 2 to 3 carriers because they want to sweep the docks. So the economics are dramatically different between truckload and LTL. But now Jake can correct me and tell me where I'm wrong.
All right, Jake, what grade does he get?
You're describing the difference between a Greyhound bus schedule where I'm waiting and loading it up and filling it up because I'm going to make that run and I'm going to go from point A to point B, but I'm only going to make that run on Wednesdays.
All right. So again, I know we've touched on a couple of key takeaways already, but I want to double dip on a couple of these, little ice cream analogy, maybe a little bit of pun intended there. Three core trends were identified in this report. I want to call these out and get all our panel here to speak to them again if they haven't already. Number one is pricing power shifting back to the carriers, even without that stronger freight demand that we referenced. Chris, weigh in on that.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. And the metric that I want to see that I haven't seen anyone do is the percentage of who calls who, right? In this tight market, it's shippers calling carriers and brokers. But about a year ago is brokers and carriers calling shippers. So I'm always want to see who's doing the calling, and that tells you where the pressure is.
Who picks up the phone first? Bobby, weigh in there.
I agree. Nothing more to add.
Okay, I concur.
We are agreeing way too much. We need to start talking about politics or religion or something. More excitement in here.
All the stuff I have to stay away from. Yay.
Hey, I'll tell you what. It's a rodeo in here with y'all three. All right, so Jake, your thoughts on the price on who's got the power?
The carriers do. Hell yes. I mean, it's what we have swung. Chris has accurately called that out, and the rates are showing it, right? And the reality is, if we were in a situation where the demand, the marketplace demand was higher, maybe we'd have a different discussion. But we're not. Okay, with inflation and the cost. Look, we're hunkered down, and right now you're in the bomb shelter trying to figure out where am I going to make the money as a shipper work, because right now with the rate structure, it's not working for you.
All right, so I'm going to fish for some disagreement here. I'm going to stick with you here, Jake, on this core trend, core topic identified here. Number two, are spot rates leading a broader market reset? And what must shippers understand about this cycle? Jake, tell us.
Well, let's start with the fact, are spot rates going higher? Yes. What shippers need to understand with that is they're going to have to get far more creative with other logistical and transportation options if they're trying to find a way to cut costs, because it's not going to come from the base rate package and the base contracted lanes that you have set up. You're going to have to look and say, what needs to be true for me to create an environment where I have more closed loop environments, where I have more dedicated freight, where I can put it off? Because that actually then matches up with what carriers want to do, which is to maximize the use of the available scarce capacity.
All right. Bobby, weigh in there. What shippers must understand about this cycle?
Well, historically, improvements in spot pricing tend to precede, changes in contract rates. And I think we've already touched on that a few times in the conversation. But as capacity tightens and spot rates continue to improve, contract negotiation should balance out as well. And that'll reduce some of the leverage. And we kind of, again, indicated that. That'll reduce some of the leverages that shippers have more recently enjoyed. They're going to have to meet them where they meet them.
Okay. And Chris, you heard what Jake and Bobby shared. You agree with that? You concur with that? Disagree? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think as opposed to the 90s, I think shippers are much more sophisticated and that they understand that there's a lane is not a lane is not a lane. And so what they're seeing now is they're looking at the portfolio. And so what you go is dedicated. If I can move it dedicated in a market like this, that's the best. And carriers like that too, because it's higher utilization if you have lanes for that. And then you have the contract rates, the one ways, and those are getting beaten right now. But then there's the dynamic, and dynamic's usually 15 to 20% of your volume, maybe probably 50% of your lanes, but a very small percentage of your volume. And that's the one that's the canary in the coal mine. That's what we're seeing now. And so when you're doing your budgeting, the more you put to dedicated, you can budget for that. Contract, you can kind of budget for that, but your routing guide is not a budget. You might think it is. But then for the dynamic, you just have to think about the two variables. How often will I have to use it? And what's the range that it'll go to? And so that's kind of your slush fund. And I would treat that dynamic rate that you're going to have, everyone has it, like a fuel surcharge. Treat it that way, where you're subject to the whims of the market for pricing. You are subject to the whims of the market for that piece of it. But it's not your whole budget. It's a piece of your budget.
All right. So, Chris, I'm going to stick with you here for this third element that really came from this edition, the rates edition. Are you seeing carriers display discipline and prioritization when it comes to profit versus volume? Your thoughts, Chris?
It's a mix, right? Every carrier, it depends on the carrier and depends on the relationship with the shipper. So if you've got you're a carrier and you've got a core customer and the shipper, you're going to treat them differently than the transactional one who only comes in when they need some volume. So I think it really depends on the relationship. We've done a lot of projects up here at MIT looking at the relationships between shippers and carriers, shippers and brokers and all that. And the question we had was, are they elephants or are they goldfish? In other words, do they remember when the market was soft and how they were treated and they change the way they do it? Or are they goldfish? They don't remember anything and everything's new. And what we found is generally brokers and carriers are goldfish. They'll behave as they can. They'll find the market for that. Shippers tend to be more elephantish. They remember when a carrier let them down. But that's all mainly based off of buyer-seller relationships. If you're selling, you don't have the luxury to pick your customers a lot of time. As a buyer, you kind of do.
Bobby, I like that elephants and goldfish analogy. It makes so much sense to me. But what do you think in terms of...
Carriers don't believe it. Carriers never believe it. But I can show it in the data.
I believe that. I believe that, Chris.
And elephants love squashing goldfish every chance they get.
They do.
All right. So, Bob, you were talking carriers maybe displaying discipline and prioritization when it comes to profit versus volume. Your thoughts, Bobby?
I think earlier in the conversation, we mentioned rejection rates. I think that shows that carriers are willing to prioritize their profitability over than just pumping out the volumes, and the fact that they're willing to wait or move towards higher rates in order to keep their profitability. I think that's what's helping the rates to continue to rise and driving them towards some equalization with contract rates.
I concur.
Yeah, they're sustainable returns rather than just give me all the volume I can get and I'll work with it.
Mm. And Jake, your thoughts on all of the above?
Chris nailed it. There's two camps, right? Are they focused more on profitability than they have been in the past? Absolutely. All right. Are you kidding? You got to be insane not to, right? You've had 3 years where you've been at the altar and had people turning you away for trying to get a rate increase when you really needed it to manage your profitability, right? Now the pendulum is turned, but you're going to judiciously do that. For your longstanding business partners, you're going to behave differently. Are you going to go in with rate increases? Absolutely, right? Because they're warranted, quite frankly. But I'm going to say, extract more pounds of flesh on those who occasionally show up and ring you and need help to cover their freight, but haven't been a longtime partner with you, right?
Yeah, I mean, every carrier, you're trying to maximize long-term profitability, not short-term, unless you have a really cash flow issue, right? And that's another story, but long-term. So the relationships matter. We always say, you know, everything's going digital. That's true. Relationships matter at times like this. And we're seeing how that works out. But every shipper doesn't treat every carrier the same and vice versa.
Everybody's trying to manage to their view of the variables and make the best decisions they can.
Yep.
We're in a world of a new never normal where we're not sure administratively and politically exactly what additional shoe's going to fall. So I'm trying to make sure that I'm making hedged bets on how I manage my customers and how I manage those that still need my support.
Agree 100%. The one thing I'd like to say, though, we're always in unprecedented times. I can't think of a time in the last 100 years where our situation wasn't unprecedented. We're always precedented. There's always crises and uncertainties. Only looking backwards, it looks like it was the good old days. 70s stagflation was not the good old days.
No. We've got a sign hanging on at our home that says, hey, these are the good old days that we're living in right now. But that's a great perspective. And I'm trying to figure out, Jake, am I an elephant or a goldfish? I am not sure,
goldfish,
Jake.
Goldfish, Scott.
Goldfish. Okay, good. There's probably benefits and disadvantages to each. But anyway, all right. So, folks, as we come down a home stretch, we're going to get some prescriptive actions supply chain leaders got to take given these data-driven insights we've delivered already. And we're going to get Jake and Chris to weigh in, break out their crystal ball, and let us know what we can expect. So get ready with both. All right, so Chris, circling back to you. In light of everything we've discussed to this point, and we've already mentioned a couple things, Bobby, Jake, and you've already mentioned a couple things that shippers should be thinking about, but specifically, how should shippers be rethinking budgets and forecasts right now, Chris?
Yeah, so I think the big thing is segmenting your network. And if you push as much as you can into the bonds of freight transportation, the dedicated, if you can do dedicated where it's relatively high volume, fairly consistent and somewhat balanced, look for that. And carriers will love that. They always look for that as well. That's why I was just talking had an interview with Jim Filter, the new CEO at Schneider, and they're now 70% of their truckload is dedicated versus over the road. And that's flipped over the last 10 years. So go that way. The contract rates, you've negotiated those and you look at those. And what some shippers are doing now is you pre-assign. You give your incumbents and say, you know what? I know the rates are going to go up. If I increase you X, you know, will you stay? And you kind of keep them out of the bid for that and kind of secure it up. And then the dynamic stuff, that's what I was talking about before. That's the stuff you cannot control. You might think you can control it, but you don't. And so just budget that accordingly as a variable that you cannot control and just put bounds on it as far as much you use and what you think the market's going to do.
Mm. It's like a panel of Chris, Bobby, and Jake. You think you control the panel, but you don't control the panel at all. All right, Jake, get you to weigh in. What shippers should be thinking, budgets and forecasts, and then Bobby may have a comment as well. Jake?
Oh, I hammer down on segmentation. element again. It is the smartest move that a shipper has available to them at the moment in these times and what we're facing. And quite frankly, if you use the amount of data that we talked about that's available to you today, you can actually flip that pendulum a bit. I work with a lot of clients, and I'm going to tell you, many of them are under mature when it comes to actually doing what Chris said, which is base mechanics of, hey, how many of these things can I flip into more dedicated moves? That's just being smart, okay? Mm. But it takes you doing the work to be able to understand the dynamics of how the data lays out, how the shipments and the order profiles lay out. And I hate to say it, most of those clients where if I, they're not the ones that have been using advanced analytics or AI to help do that.
All right, Bobby, comments on budgets, forecasts, and shippers?
Well, again, I think a lot of it has to do with the data. You know, they can ask themselves questions. You know, are they adjusting their pricing to account for increased shipping spend? How do the rates compare with current averages? And what analytics do they have or wish they had in order to manage their risk? So we already talked about there's a lot of data out there, but you know, how do you corral it in? How do you organize it? How do you interrogate it to make sure that it's giving you the right information and the right signals? That's part of the reason why we put the rates edition out there, is kind of to help focus some of that using, you know, the incredible data we get from DAT. So, you know, that's what it's about, is analyzing, basically putting their thinking caps on and trying to make the best planning. It's a planning conversation, not just a rates negotiation. It's about planning your operations so that you have more stability through whatever's going on outside.
All right. Let's talk about signals. Chris, signals that shippers should be watching most closely right now and in the weeks ahead.
Fuel, always. Look at that. But it depends on your industry. And so if I was just talking with someone from IANA, for intermodal. And so what's interesting, what's been happening there is international intermodal has been down, imports, but domestic is up. So on a whole, it's kind of even, but it's shifting, right? So the split between international and domestic is kind of bouncing back and forth. So depending on your industry, there's different things you want to follow, but fuel is one. And then look at the spot premium ratio, to me, is the next big one, because that tells you kind of the momentum that the market's moving. But there's, as we talked about earlier, there's so much data out there, and it's usually the challenge is you get overwhelmed with the data. So I'd pick one or two things to track and just track them over time and see how they work for you. Every shipper is a little different. Every shipper is a little bit of a snowflake, and they're affected by different things.
Mm. Jake, what particular signal are you suggesting to shippers out there?
Well, I'm always looking at the rate and fuel index, right? So I'm looking at the fuel swings, because that's a large scale component. But when we're in a market like this, where we've got, I'll call it, we're at the edge of what I'll call an underinvestment in capacity. Chris outlined earlier, hey, wait a minute, we had a bunch of players that came into the market at, you know, at the front end of the pandemic, who really shouldn't have been there to begin with. And it's taken a while to bleed all that off, right? Well, we're at a point where we do need some added capacity to start coming back on. But I believe looking at that is really important right now, because I think it's going to give you an indication of how long our transportation partners out there are going to wait before they begin adding to the how much capacity they have.
Okay. The tidal wave of data that's out there, Bobby, what's a signal or two you'd really suggest shippers pay attention to?
I agree with Chris. I also, you know, it's self-promotion, the freight payment index, and the rates edition. Again, we are using an added date, DAT data, to both of those precisely to add that extra bit of data and information, kind of distilled out, obviously, through U.S. Bank perspective. But as, you know, $46 billion in payments, data to back it up, and it's based on what we've actually processed, not conjecture. Those are the signals I pay attention to.
Outstanding, Bob. And folks, the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index and the rates edition is free. you're going to enjoy. My favorite part, especially on the standard edition, is the regional breakdowns, and in particular, the economic information and perspective is included along with the rates and data itself. So go check it out. All right. So Chris and Bobby and Jake, all three of y'all have prescribed all sorts of actions that shippers should take to stay ahead of these continued rising cost pressures on a variety of fronts. Is there one thing, though, Chris, that you don't feel like we have, one prescribed action you don't think we've recommended yet that you would like to add?
I think we kind of hit them all. I think the big thing is, like Jake and Bobby has been saying, is first, know what you got, right? Do the segmentation analysis. But like I said, know, because different industries have very different profiles. If you're in paper and pulp, you know you're going to be paying below market because it's a low commodity. If you're on retail, you're going to be paying above the average. You just are, because your timeliness matters more to you. So I think it depends, again, how you face this market depends on your industry, how your value of product, your importance of being on time, and that'll dictate how you want to procure things. So I think one is segment, know what you got to buy, know what you got to manage, and two, manage those relationships and manage the right relationships in the right way. It's all about managing that portfolio.
All right. Jake, what would you add? Anything we missed on prescribed actions and recommendations?
It's a beautiful time to be a supply chain leader, because this is a period where you actually truly earn your pay. You know, look, you've had the benefit of the last 1 or 2 years where you're actually in a, hey, I'm going to extract my pound of flesh. Well, guess what? It's flipped the other way. Well, now you got to put your thinking beanie on, actually go to work and say, what needs to be true for me to actually flip this again back to my favor? And that takes creativity. Chris talked about an element. Look, the entire supply chain runs on a time element. It fundamentally does every single day. You actually get to determine part of why it runs on the time element it does. What I mean by that is, hey, I've got a relationship with key partners and I've agreed to response time of 8 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, 36, fill in the blank, right? I have the ability to go back and say, well, wait a minute, it's costing me X if I want to maintain that. Okay, if I wanted to move it to Y, what would I need to change about the balance and the way that we service the lane, all those things? Those things, they seem like, well, they wouldn't make a tangible benefit. They make a huge benefit. They'll unlock a lot of ability for you to go back and switch volume that wasn't previously dedicated into dedicated, if, in fact, you play with the time interval.
All right. And Bobby, prescribed actions for shippers out there as we continue to navigate. As Chris mentioned, it's not unprecedented. It's always precedented, I think is what he said. Anything we missed there, Bobby?
No, I think they covered it pretty well. Planning and strategy, being willing to adjust your plan, being willing to adjust your strategy, and not just, you know, one size fits all. I'm going to power through. The ones that are more successful at navigating this are the ones that have that flexibility and are willing to put the time in to really get down and figure out the course corrections that they need, rather than just straight ahead and we'll get through it.
But one other thing, let me add in one thing, and this is the beautiful thing that this, the data that we put out there does. The question that every transportation executive needs to persuade their CFO, the chief purchasing officer, whatever, is, you know, prices are going up. Is it me or is it the market? And by using these indices, you can identify whether it is you or the market, because the market might be going up 10, 15%. And you can now go and say, if I'm only going up 5%, that's showing your relation to the market. The truckload is so strange in that you have to compare to the existing market where you are. No one sets the prices. There's no market maker out there. It's constantly flowing along. So you have to compare yourself to where the market is now. But that helps you. The indices that we provide helps you say, oh, it's me or it's the market, and helps you determine if you're above market or below market.
And are we expecting a central poobah at any point in time, Chris?
No, never.
Or should there be one? Never.
Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Maybe you've heard centralized economies tend to not do well.
No.
Hey, we're finding some disagreement now. All right. All right. So, folks, if you've been tuned in to this series going back 6, 7 years, you know that Bobby Holland, while he can predict the future like none other, he's unable to share that, because he is with a financial institution on this show. So all the pressure falls then on Chris and Jake. And Chris, actually, Jake, I'm going to start with you here. So I'm not going to couch it any certain way. But if you think of the next, let's call it next quarter, next two quarters, what do you believe? What's your bold prognostication for supply chain, folks?
Be very blunt. If you're a shipper in the next for the next quarter, you should expect pain, okay? And the amount of pain is based on whether you've rolled up your sleeves and gotten to work. Because the only way, the pendulum has flipped, guys. I'm sorry. That peace that you were enjoying is over. So have you been sitting back drinking coffee, or have you actually been engaged?
All right. So folks, hopefully you haven't been leaning back, drinking coffee, eating ice cream, but doing something with these relatively stable times. Because as Jake's prescribing, you got some pain to come. Chris.
Let's go back a little bit. It's been 3 years. I was just looking at the data, and it was mid-2022 that the new rate differential, remember that's what expect from running a bid, was negative for 3 years. In other words, you're going to save money every time you run a bid, right? And that's only changed as of Q4 of the past year, 2025. So it's changing. So you got to understand, most transportation executives have been accused of crying wolf for 3 years. Rate's going to go up. Market's going to tighten. And it didn't. And now it did. And so here's what I'm predicting. I'm Q2, Q3, 2027 is when the market's going to flip back again. Not that it's going to become really loose. It's going to when spot goes below contract. And I'm saying that because I like to look at that spot premium ratio. How much is the spot rate over the contract rate? And over the last three cycles, it usually peaks around 30%. And then there's enough incentive. It brings capacity in to meet the demand that's there, whether it's a demand-driven cycle or capacity reduction-driven cycle. So I think right now we're roughly at around 23, 24% in dry van. Got a little room to go, but it's going to start pulling in capacity. It will, and then it takes a while for that to go. So I think this cycle, if it started in December 25, we're looking about 18 months for it to do a half cycle, right? And that's my prediction.
Yep. And I agree with what Chris has said, but I think there's going to be some
exceptions
to that, especially in certain segments of transport, industry vertical segments. I think we'd all agree it's Katie bar the door right now when it comes to flatbed to be able to get components to large-scale infrastructure projects, and there's going to be an increase in capacity earlier than that on that. It's just economically viable to do it right now, right? So it's a special cost. It's not the base. I agree with Chris on the base of when it's going to turn.
But the interesting thing is the data center build out, that could crash. There's a lot. No one's making money right now. No one's making any money except flatbed carriers, apparently.
I got two thoughts. Number one, Jake, I'm not sure who Katie is, but folks, Katie needs to bar the door. And number two, Chris, we're going to bring you next time with a whiteboard. I bet you and a whiteboard are a deadly combination, Chris.
You know, I love my whiteboard.
Let's do it next time. All right. So as we start to wrap here, Chris, Jake, and Bobby, I want to start with making sure folks know how to connect, how to access, how to download their own copy of the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index. Folks can subscribe to it at that. It's real easy. Bobby, what would your advice be there?
Just go to freight.usbank.com and sign up. And you can also get the regular Freight Payment Index if you don't already receive it. And they show up in your inbox.
All right. Just that easy. All right, Chris, two-part question for you as we start to wrap. Number one, how can folks connect with you and the DAT Freight Analytics team? And number two, you got to give us coming attractions. What's coming up next on your podcast, Freight Vibe?
Sure. Yeah. So you can always find me. There's not that many Chris Kaplises out there. Just Google me, at DAT or at MIT. I'm pretty easy to find. We just finished a conversation that dropped last week with Jim Filter. He's the fifth CEO of Schneider. Been a long time career employee at Schneider and really insightful on how he's looking at things. And so that was a great conversation. That's out there now. Next week, I have a conversation with Andre Mendoza-Pena, who is the prime writer of the Kearney CSCMP State of Logistics. And they do this every year. And Andre's great. So we talk about how things are changing and gives an idea of why things have changed and what to look at going forward. And then at the next one I have after that is with the chief economist at IANA, the Intermodal Association of North America. That's Andrew Siebold. And we talk about how that market's changing because there is some rebounding coming on in intermodal. Whenever fuel goes up, right, everyone becomes green and you start shifting to intermodal. So we're seeing more of that. So a lot of interesting stuff on Freight Find Podcast.
And a new episode drops every week. Is that right, Chris?
Every other week. Every other week.
And folks,
I can't do weekly. Can't do it. Every other week's plenty.
Folks,
feels whiteboard time.
Jake, you get perhaps the toughest question of the whole hour. If you had to boil it down to one key takeaway here today from what we heard from you and Chris and Bobby, what would that be?
We're sailing stormy waters for another couple of quarters if you're on the shipper side. And it's just truth and reality. Chris laid it out for you. Bobby's, you know, his data proves it. Look, you've taken advantage of, if you're a shipper, you've taken advantage of smooth sailing for a couple of years and pocketed that money. The question is, have you been productively reinvesting it?
All right. I like it. I hope there's no regrets. I hope there's no regrets out there, folks. Jake, good stuff. I want to thank the whole panel here today. What a great, lively conversation. Hard to wrangle this trio of godfathers of freight. Bobby Holland, Director of Freight Business Analytics at U.S. Bank. Bobby, always a pleasure. Great to see you here today.
Bobby, I just, every time I look at the freight index, though, I see red, right? And you're using beautiful blue colors on it. But when I see it, as Chris knows, I'm looking at it seeing red.
Hey, don't challenge. Who knows what's going to come out next in the next edition? We shall see. Dr. Chris Kaplis, Chief Scientist with DAT Freight Analytics, host of Freight Vine. Chris, always a pleasure. I learned a lot from you here today.
Great. Always fun. Anytime.
Big thanks, Jake Barr. Jake, the one and only, the John Wayne, the global supply chain. Jake, thanks for being here.
Having fun as always.
That's right.
We're the godfathers. Are you Frito?
We'll save that debate. That's going to be a debate. That'll be the debate, Chris.
I didn't that one.
Also, big thanks to Amanda, Trisha, and Dan, our adjunct producer out there. Big thanks to all the behind-the-scenes production making it all happen. Most importantly, folks, thank you all for tuning in. Keep your feedback coming. Feedback is a blessing. We love it. We thrive on it. And you're why we do everything we do. Make sure you download the U.S. Bank Freight Payment Index, including the most recent rates edition. But most importantly, take one very actionable insight that we got here from Chris or Bobby or Jake and do something with it, right? Deeds, not words. You know how it goes. That's how we're going to transform this industry. And with all that said, Scott Luton here challenging all of you. Do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. We'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.